All right. So, the other thing I wanted to go at is that my critical development was in my teenage years. Who I became as a person that, to be quite honest, wasn't expressed until I was in my 30s. I'm gonna be honest, a lot of my demeanor and who I am today was formed in my 13, 14, 15 age cycle. And these are things that define me now, because it's one of the reasons why, again, who I am now. So my classmate in December 1999, I only had one classmate. By the end of the class of 2000, there was five of us, and by the end of calendar 2000, there were seven. They broke up the older elementary and put them in another classroom, so we had five middle school age students, and it was technically the pervasive developmental disorder program. I wasn't exposed to boys with special needs that much, but these guys were really shallow. They were really, really, really shallow. I subjected myself to some of the dirty stuff, but I didn't like this at all. And I got at times uncomfortable, and it was, I mean, if there was a girl in the classroom, it would be sexual harassment for sure. There was some dirty stuff that was going on. Bathroom humor was very pervasive, in the midst of class, as well. When they were being restrained, these boys were disgusting. They were literally, literally disgusting. And I remembered. I was like 14 or 15, and I'm like, I don't think I want to go too much on the testosterone path. Meaning, so what I'm saying with this was, I had an endocrinologist from 98 to 2003. So 5 years, they were going to give me hormone treatment because I wasn't developing, I was physically not developing pursuant to the bell curve of the pubescent path. That was why I went and saw the endocrinologist. So it was even before I was, it was my second year of fifth grade. I had blood work done. They were trying to get a balance on the hormones. And by the time I was 15, it kind of peaked, or whatever, however the chemical, was passing every check marks that were. And I am grateful that my mother respected my decision, because there are other parents that probably wouldn't. But in the summer of 2003, where I was at this point in the different program, I opted against the process, which would have been going to Dartmouth Hitchcock up in Lebanon, going through the getting testes, because I knew there's. So I want to talk about my sixth sense. I had a sixth sense of what things would happen later in my life. It's called a survivor's instinct, in my opinion. As much as this is like a victim statement, the actions I did were. So in the moment, I'm surviving. When I'm not in the moment, I'm a victim. So I realized if I went forward with this therapy, and again, I have my father's Japanese roots physically. Technically, I'm a quarter Japanese. I like to say I'm half Japanese. Because if you just look at you can't see my legs if you're watching on the cam on YouTube. And you'll see more of my torso than my legs. And I'm 5 foot five, basically. It's one of the reasons why I don't fit into a lot of furniture because of the Japanese factor. So imagine I take this hormones and I'm 5'10" and I have this big ass upper body. It would just, not only that, being an odd guy and being tall would just threaten people. So being, I didn't have a problem being short. My therapist is 5'3", and he makes, references about his insecurities of his height. I was not insecure at all. I'd rather be odd and short than odd and tall and be more of a threat to others. And I was 16. I was 16 at that time. And so I had these instincts. Didn't know how to verbalize it, but you just knew that, you had to make decisions, and you had to be, if you're going on gut, which I don't recommend people going, you just go to your gut and just stick to it, and then hope that your thoughts catch up later in life. And that's exactly what happened, because I was starting to say to myself, if I was in that program for one more year, I would have become one of those sick boys. They really were gross people. So, I opted to, just like I said, there's these various things, maneuvers, social things that I had to do, and I had to make decisions in my life, and they were critical decisions. Meanwhile, I'm still getting subjected to gunk, and I didn't learn a lot in school. It turns out at least the audit district cost was about $450,000 in the 8 years that I was out of district, from 12 to 21. Basically those, roughly 8 years. Not to mention the in-district costs that don't get tabulated as easy to individualize. But I just became a broken mess, and it was like literally during the teenage years, your body is going through stuff, your brain is going through things, and these teachers didn't really get it. They were far left feminists. I know that my second teacher at Seacoast was very liberal. I mean, not that she was interjecting her politics, but I know she was in NPR, and she was an Al Gore fangirl, and but she's working with boys, and she kind of doesn't like them as boys. There was sexism undertones against the guys in the program, and let me tell you, that you don't think that that will go downstream to an individual. It happened to me. So I am, I became more insecure as I got older, and it got worse. I was off balance in high school, and I just couldn't grasp the direction that I should be going. But at the same time, I'm still going through therapy with Miss Bullock for, I don't call her Dr. Bullock, for all those years. My mother puts me in the therapy because she thinks it works. I told my mother it was probably not the most smartest decision, and there wasn't a lot of goal-oriented things, and that's on Teresa. She didn't, she wasn't goal-oriented. So it wasn't until I was almost 30 what therapy was supposed to be. And so I had that negative experience. There was a lot of threats in my life. I don't say that very casually. There was a lot of perpetual fear that's instilled, because you had to live in fear. You had to be paranoid, because if you were in the real world, you were enemy number one. And I couldn't, terrorizing students into submission is not a very smart thing either. And I know that a bunch of schools are probably still doing this, and it's wrong. And I just remember that stuff growing up. Probably by the time I was 15, I was looking for romance, and there were no girls in our program. I don't think there was any girls at all. It was, and that was another thing, being put out of district and being around mostly male disorder, and that stigma grows on you. And I just didn't like, being in that environment. And then you're being punished for being a guy, and then you go from being being in the bad boys group to be a good gentleman, and then you don't fit into that because there's not that many other people like you. So, that had a lot to do with it as well. Also just learning the peers and how they interact and how they were a little too aggressive or a little too optimistic. I had to learn those cues because I'm like, okay, don't be that guy. That was how I kind of survived socializing, was observations and heightened awareness of others. So you're paying attention to the typicals, and you're also paying attention to your peers, and you're in the middle. So you're better off being in the middle of average, because you don't want to be at risk with those people that don't know how to socialize. And you had to be really careful how to do it, and that was hard at times. And so, in that environment, I'm talking about high school at this point, and while my peers were probably at college at this point, class of 05, I'm going into the school to work program, which that had a lot more challenges, because when you're at work, you had to have higher social standards, and that was very difficult. Not that my social skills are that off. They tend to frazzle at times, but you couldn't make any mistakes. I mean, because if you made a mistake, you will be targeted, and you can't prove your way out of it. And so that really made things like taking risk. It was at the point where, you go from one program where they say, well, the real world's gonna be tough. The other one's like, well, the real world's tougher, but you need to do something for yourself. And you're getting these conflicting messages often in the 2.5 year basis, because that was my average retention in high school and middle school. So I wasn't in the same school for very long. And then there's just a sense of geographical isolation. The thing about Seacoast, again, Seacoast Learning Collaborative, Londonderry is the far western town in Rockingham County. Because Litchfield borders them there in Hillsborough. It's just the way the county's drawn up. But I learned how New Hampshire was so divided by going there, because I go there, they don't even know where Londonderry is on the New Hampshire map. They never really been there. They don't know anybody there. My first teacher actually lived in Darien, New Hampshire, city the next town over. But most of them were living in Stratham's, Portsmouth, which that's in Rockingham County as well. And a lot of the more closer to the seacoast. And I learned really that people within our own state don't really know what's around our state. I felt like I was in another state to begin with. I just felt geographically isolated. And then not to mention the normal bus path was to get off exit 5 where 101 used to end on 102, which takes you to Tillandinery, where I used to live. Supposedly there was a more direct route, but you're going through crappy Chester, Dirty Dairy, sorry, and then you get to Elltown. But when you get to, like, past the blinking light in Chester, which is like the midway point between Raymond and Derry, it felt forever. It felt like it took ages. And I believe New Hampshire 102 is only 22 miles long. There's a Wikipedia article on it, and again, with particularly when you get into Derry and the traffic lights, you can get around Derry through Sinead Road, because Sinead Road actually goes on to 102. You take that road, cross another road, cross 28, go around the back roads to Woodmont Orchards to get in Londonderry that way. But it's still a lot of moseying around. There's no straightaway, so I always preferred going through 93 and getting off exit 4. It felt like forever, and like I said, it's like going to places like Candia felt like a different world. Just going a few towns away from Londonderry felt more rural than what Londonderry is known for. And so that's where Stephen was, you know, while you guys were, you know, home, or you were going to your co-curricular stuff, if you really did all that stuff. I was commuting. And the same thing happened when I was in Massachusetts. I was on another route where we had to go to Middlesex County before we got to Methuen. So the way it was, I had to get out for 7:50, go to the school in Middlesex County, which was in Chelmsford. So basically, like, where I live, it's more direct, but you had to cross the Merrimack or get on 3A, get on US 3, and they were widening Route 3 in Massachusetts at that point, so you had to deal with construction delays. And, you get up, Chelmsford, there used to be a rotary as the overpass, they got rid of that, get in there, and then you'll get to Methuen after 9 o'clock. There were a lot of times I was late for school, which wasn't a problem because it was made up. And then the teachers were like on like overtime, wasn't overtime, but they were basically one-on-one student until 3:30. And this was so the school district could save money on pooling students. But again, I would remind you that Chelmsford and Methuen are two different parts. You know, yes, the Merrimack River bends by that point, but still, I mean, it's a different region. I mean, if say someone was going to Chelmsford and what's the town? Townsend? Yeah, that would make more sense if there was a school there, like a border town, I'm thinking like in that area, because it's kind of closer than going to, you have to go on 495 to 93, you have to cross the Merrimack River and then the east and westerly direction to get to Methuen. It's like that river's even big when it hits Lowell and turns on a west easterly. I bet you that overpass when it goes to the east westerly is a little bit longer. And again, that damn river does divide you, you know. And I got there late, and so a lot of these students were commuting while I was just getting on with life. And yeah. It was really much a lot of hell, and there wasn't a lot of time to reflect. And I can speak with that with fact. Like, particularly in middle school, you know, I was there were some days I was sick and I wasn't really sick. It was like a mental health day. Of course, that was like frowned upon. Oh, you're avoiding school because you're not sick attitude. You had that stigma coming towards you. And there might have been minor sicknesses for sure, but you know, it's you probably, if you went to school, you probably would have gotten even. You probably would have gotten a full-blown cold or a full-blown tummy ache or whatever. You know, it was, you know, I didn't have much sick days when I was in a better environment. When I was in a better environment, I had better attendance. The records show that. But, the other thing with the SLC experience was they were very nitpicky. Not only were they, you know, singling out your interests and your happiness, they were very critical, and I think I used that as a weapon. A lot of the abuse that had been linked to SLC was used as weapon mechanisms for, I'm not saying like violent weapons, but just using it political weapons for my own interests. So in one instance, you know, where the teachers are like picking on my neatness or cleanliness, I would use that to criticize other people in power as I got older, because I was getting so much criticism that I had to deflect on it. It was like they were just like, they had to point out all your flaws just to make you change it. It was gaslighting, for sure. And I was, I get blanked out because this is like a lot of things that happen. But you know, just being insecure and being further insecure just didn't make any sense. And you know, I just looked through some of the, I still had this in one of my boxes of stuff. I still have the certificate of completion, but I got this book of the places that you will go. And it was funny, they wouldn't allow me to read Dr. Seuss, because a lot of Dr. Seuss copy was very tongue-tieable. Like, if you had like, I don't have dyslexia, but I'll sometimes mix up words. And they just made me stop reading Dr. Seuss books because I flubbed it up. I mean, I'm not, I swear that's what they did. There was, some of the things that they wrote was completely, like, they were, good luck, I miss you. I mean, this is, like, best of luck. A lot of this was ass kissing. They were not, they complimented me at the end, which, one, my OT therapist writes, keep the great sense of, humor, or miss your sense of humor around here. It was like, yeah, I didn't believe it. I mean, I kept the book. I mean, I haven't really looked at it, but some of the, other signatures I got from staff, around the building, it was and I don't even know some of these people. One of them that wrote some of this was, so there is particularly two people that I believed in, and they put their full, one put her full name out on there. Several of them, actually. But I'm going to read this one, because she was, I'm going to read two. One, I'm an identifier. Sam, I wish you luck in the best of, I wish you the best of luck at your new school. I'm sure you'll be successful. She puts her full name on there, and that kind of tells me that there was more of an emotional connection. That's kind of how I read into it. That's the only one I'm going to read, but a lot of it was just, I'm looking at it now because I thought I had seen it differently. It depends on the day. I guess when you look at your history, not that I live on my history, by the way. Some days you read it, it has meaning. Some days it's bullshit. And today I'm looking at it and I thought I remember what I remember, but it was mostly bullshit. It was like passive aggressive, to be honest. Like I said, that there is two staff that I thought they wrote it differently in the autograph, but one was a speech therapist at that point, and she was like 10 years older than I am, so she's about 44 now. 43 or 44 at least. And she was, her veneer was, her facade was a reserved individual, but you know there was stuff going on behind the facade for sure. And she was one of those people that I think saw so many things, but she wasn't going home to her boyfriend with blood and guts. Now granted, there wasn't any exchange of blood and guts like in the restraints, but in the figurative sense, for sure they were taking things out from me. The abuse that I got at Seacoast was so pervasive that I know, pervasive, it's a nice pun to describe my condition. It was so obvious that they just didn't like me or didn't respect me as a human, as an underage kid, because we still have rights as children, you know? And so I felt that these staff, the staff that I had, many of them came home, were coming home with blood and washing it away. And one of, both the teachers were having children or were expecting. I already mentioned one of them. And that teacher that allegedly cleaned her hair, she had three other kids after that. She was in the jackpot. And my other teacher had two kids. And it's like, if I ever saw them with their kids, I already had like a line. And I would say, you know, this woman that's kissed you to bed harmed my life. You know, those staff were so professional that they would go off the clock and like and just completely like compartmentalize themselves. They were in their mid-20s at that time. They just go home and just call it another day's work. Another day's work of worth of work. While some of the people like that speech therapist and the teacher's assistant in another class, who the one that she puts her full name on there, which I think says a lot, saw, you know, they weren't palsy-walsy for sure. They were professional, but they were professional enough to have the veneer and the facade, but have the ability of, yeah, I'm not in the most best environment. This is dicey stuff, but I will do everything in my power to not subject myself to all the stuff. And I learned that later in my life, that people are working there. They're not working there just because they don't have other options. They're doing it probably to keep the talent pool somewhat accountable, and that no workplace is perfect. And I kind of learned that in my 30s, a couple of labor days ago, I started to realize that in every aspect of a job and enterprise, there's going to be bad people, and if they're at the top or in power, there's going to be people out there that are just chipping away and understand that people are getting screwed over, and they're professional enough to hide it, but it's subtle enough to know that they actually have some sympathy and empathy. And most of those tend to be women, by the way. Don't want to be sexist. So, you know, in that time, I wasn't, you know, socializing with people. I mean, a lot of it, I look back at it, a lot of it was school district related. And by the time I was in high school, they changed how the student relations to the school district were. And by the time I was in high school, I was out of district, out of mind. As I said in a previous show, I had, we remember going into Lunenburg High School, and we'll get back to you, and they never got back to us with trying to include me in the programs, the social clubs and stuff like that. You were totally banned from it, from claiming district policies and stuff like that. Whatever. That's why, you know, people wondered about me. That I get this stuff on Facebook before I started blocking them all. I'm like, oh, I wondered where you were going to be. I thought I'd see you on TV doing the weather. And I'm like, you think I want to be a weatherman? You think I'm that much of a perv? You think I'm that weird? You know, I wanted to be a traffic reporter. Oh, crap. Oh, it's not over there. I thought I had my shadow traffic sign behind me, but I don't have my shadow traffic behind me, unfortunately. But that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a shadow traffic reporter, because, you know, at least with a traffic reporter, you got personality. And the fact that my classmates did not see that showed how much they thought of me. That crushed me, that PM I had with the classmate I've been talking about, the one I've been the closest on Facebook, that, you know, isn't, I severed contact. I'm like, I'm not going to communicate on Facebook. We're not going to be friends through a Blue app or the Messenger app. Absolutely not. I'm just, this isn't right. And, you know, I'm kind of still struggling. It's still trying to figure out how you be successful in aspects of life. And again, COVID-19 just added. I'm sorry, my nose is itchy. I know I don't have the cold or the coronavirus, but excuse me, people watch this. I should put a graphic on the screen. So I am, because I don't have my tissues on me. It's upstairs, damn it. But I'm gonna wrap up the show anyways. But again, I have always said that your teenage years are your critical years, not your 20s. You should have a definition by your 20s. And I kind of knew what I had to do in life, not what I wanted to do. That's been the biggest challenge, because I had to focus on what I had to do to survive. So there's a lot of survivalist instincts. I mean, yes, I spent hours on this YouTube channel and on my SoundCloud about the life's challenges. But the 12 hours of stuff I've talked about in my early years of life does not add up to the hours of off camera, off my time of what I had to do from like 13 to, you know, 30 of what not to do in life. And that is thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon hundreds of thousands of hours of one's life that has been robbed by a bunch of people that just show up to work and just read off the script. My teachers were literally bad actors. Not the hackers. I hate the buzzword part, but just the bad actor that does really shitty in movies. I mean, you know, a good actor writes, you know, reads the copy and makes it his own. The teachers, they get their job description and they just follow the minimal expectations, and they're not creative at all because it's just too much work, too much paperwork, too much this, too much accountability. Oh my God, I can't do all this stuff anymore. And that was exactly the problem. They just didn't want to, they just didn't care. And I understand it's a very tough job. I understand it. I get it. I've observed it. I've seen it. I've been on your end of it, but we're not all that bad. You don't have to make us look guilty. You don't have to punish us for a certain gender. You don't have to threaten us. You don't have to go there, but you did because you hate all guys except for a few of them. But they really did. At least at Seacoast, they really did go in my guts and steal stuff and go home and wash their hands like as if they were just washing hands. I don't think they had any sense of fear or repercussions because the New Hampshire accountability is so fucked up. It's so fucked up because the way that the New Hampshire governance works is you gotta trust the system. We have the most minimal rules, so we can't do anything wrong. But if you go to the DRC or the DOE, there is no human rights organization. It's only if you got raped or literally fucked. Okay, only if you get literally fucked can you get any support. And that would be through law enforcement. So there's no human rights because in the New Hampshire way, it's hold yourself by the bootstraps or suck it up. And what that means is you could have people with power that can get away with it. It's only if you rape a student. If you sexually molest them, you have underage sex with them, if you get in some sex offender issue, will you get held accountable? And of course, the TV station on Commercial Street will go right to that. But if you fuck them figuratively, you could get away with it. And that's what happened, at least in Seacoast, was that these teachers, they know how to ski daddy, because a lot of these people are there for two years and they go. And often by the second year, they really felt like you were at some dysfunctional radio station or a news operation, because people were just coming and going every 2 years. And staff would bump from one place to the other, and often, I don't know how they could rent an apartment if they're just jumping from one job to the other, but these people don't make a lot of money. They don't make a lot of money, and the ones that don't make a lot of money, if they're doing it, they're doing it because they love it, or they just want to have higher power or use it as a career launch pad. And some people will use it as a career launch pad to go to another school program or go into social work. There's people that jump around, and it's like a virus goes from bat to human. It's kind of that problem. But these women will they love it. They have no fear if they screw a guy over figuratively, not in the most literal sense. She could get a career, get a couple $10,000 grand on her salary, go to a public school, screw some more students over. She gets paid on how much students she doesn't literally screw over. Okay, that's how the special ed system works. It's a flawed system. It's so broken. I joked about this recently. I short-circuited so much in school, I wasn't able to learn anything meaningful. And when it wasn't meaningful to me because it wasn't relevant. We had to learn the teacher's agenda. It's all about her. The world doesn't revolve around you. But the thing you miss out is that the world doesn't revolve around other people. And that's how it works. Most of the time. And I'm still standing. I'm almost going to be 34 in a couple weeks. I'm actually going to do a video on that. You stay tuned on the YouTube channel. Because that's gonna get really interesting. So I'm going to do an interesting take on it. It does involve social media, parents, and autism, because it's kind of a spoof of a viral Facebook photo from several years back. So that's all I had for tonight. The next Legendary Exposed will be hopefully not as emotional, but it will be more of a wrap-up on that series. Like I said, these are hour long, very emotional, and I think it's in some ways it's therapeutic because it's already gone through filter therapy. So by the time you hear it, you're not getting the full range as it is when I've gone through therapy about it, or at least be coherent to express how things have happened. The last one will be probably tied in an adult life, and while I did beat that up with a dead horse before, but it's gonna be a way to wrap up probably when I moved. It was probably the closure. The closure didn't really happen until I would say 2014-ish, but the collateral emotional damage that happened growing up in that town, and not even growing up in that town for most of my teenage years, because I spent, like I said, 30 to 40 hours away from the town's borders. And you didn't grow up in Londonderry. That's why it's not on my Facebook. It did not feel like home. When I left Londonderry, it didn't feel like home. So, I'm gonna find a way to wrap it up how I closed my experience with Londonderry, and part of it was like I basically got out of Facebook and all that good stuff. I'll tell you that story another day, but it's gonna be more about where I am today from what had happened previously. And like I said, COVID-19 has a lot to do with this. I don't think I would have produced this series if I didn't think if a pandemic didn't happen. But with this pandemic, everything I thought would happen would not happen. And again, you think 2021 is gonna be this, it's gonna be better. It's not right now. So I am, there is a sense of, like I said, I've been isolated for 20 years, right? So COVID-19 just accelerated it. So that's kind of the story of probably why I produced this, was I was already in this position and it just accelerated with the pandemic, and it's like it's over. But I am hopefully gonna try to get some social, try to get more ways to be social. I think doing some of the YouTube stuff, trying to not do program related stuff, but just personality stuff, like me unboxing stuff. It's I'm not gonna do like the zone or the zoo as much. I thought programming as a program wouldn't be better, but I think programming myself as an individual might be better. So that's kind of stuff I'll be doing, as time goes on. I like I said, I have video that is 3 years old that I want to put in use. So that will be things will get better. But I just thought I need to do this because I feel like I have to tell people what I had to go through, and it needs to be out there. You could do whatever the hell you want. You want to take it out of context, yeah, good luck to that. But it's the kind of content that Dan Hebby would never touch with a 10 with a 9-inch pole. He's this guy that talks about including people with that are in wheelchairs, but won't talk about the issues and the injustices. This was 10 years, less than 10 years after Laconia closed. All right, so yeah, oh my God, we closed it down for the adults, but what about the literal children that were thrown out of district and were restrained? I mean, there was talk about it to make change, but we're not talking about the scars that happened. I just don't understand it. Are we even with non-sexual abuse, we just bottle it up? Because I was degraded for my gender. I was degraded for my disability. I was degraded because I was was smart in his own way. It had to go away. I was alone. I was geographically isolated. I mean, it's like, how is that not a violation of my rights as a student? The student has rights if they're responsible. But if you're not even giving them a chance to be responsible and assuming you're going to fail, then why aren't we not speaking loudly on this? Why do we just keep saying, well, it's the system, it's the system, it's the sins of the system? It's like you're just giving fire to the bureaucrats or the very few people that have concentrated power. Because, again, if you get figuratively fucked over by the system, you have no way to report it unless you've been raped or molested or, you know, you had a teacher that literally did underage sex. I mean, that's literally the only way you can get justice. It has to be sexual. Who's the real pervs? Who are the real pervs? Getting figuratively fucked is not an offense. That's how I'm going to leave it on tonight. I got figuratively fucked. I had nowhere to go to report it, because live free or die. Alright, so till next time, peace.